saying, Andrew. I think, you know, you're talking about we need R&D and non-R&D investment to try and build our economy, build our wealth. But how do we get business to understand that they're not communicating the shared value that that returns and how everybody can actually benefit from that?
The risk of inaction is actually high, and I think in times of turbulence and disruption, the risk of inaction is higher than in most times. And so there is a base level that says I need to do something. So there's a mindset in the first place that is required amongst business to say, are we doing enough? And I was involved in that AICD work, which said that 57% of company directors told us from a survey that they are not aware of how much their company is spending in R&D and non-R&D. They just don't know. And there's no committees other than the Audit and Risk Committee looking at the R&D investment, which is looking at the risk of action, i.e. project overruns. So the first one is mindset, and the second one is the degree to which, back to that connect point that says, are we connecting this with our constituents? And I do include customers, I do include suppliers, I do include shareholders, and I do include other stakeholders in the community to say, this is why we're doing this. A, because there's a level that says it's about survival. The next level is about parity, and the next level is about increased competitiveness and growth. And I must say, because of my business career, I'm biased towards the analogy that says unless you're growing, you're probably dying. And so you need to be growing. The question is, if someone is a standout in the industry, they're underinvesting and they're growing like crazy, something untoward's happening there. And we're not talking about that. We're talking about sustainable investment-driven innovation in intangible value-created growth and connecting that with the people who are basically the beneficiaries of that. Being explicit about that, I think. And that's part of that speaking up. This is why we're doing this. Why are we doing it? I know through in manufacturing companies who are using robotics, most Australian businesses using robotics aren't doing it to save labour costs. They're doing it because they're looking to deliver a level of precision that a robot can do that a human can't. So it's automated welding, for example, 3D printing, and others that are robot applications. We're doing it because the customer will pay for a higher level of precision, that's it. But explaining that, I think, is rather than just make the investment and hope people understand, I think this is something we've got to do better.
Thank you. I think one of the things that certainly resonates for me is really that we seem to focus on this fear and greed. So I think the community is fearful about what technology and R&D development will mean and how that will impact. You know, they're talking about things like well-being, work-life balance, those types of things, increasing wages and so on, yet business is still talking about maximising profits for the shareholders. So how do you think that conversation might change? Who would like to have a look at that?
Well, I think, first of all, I need to call this out from what the survey showed us. So this idea that technology is going to benefit employees or customers. Actually, that's what business leaders told us. You know, when we asked them specifically, you've got a technology advance in your organisation that reduces costs, who is the most important stakeholder to distribute those benefits of that? And they said shareholders. Now, as I said earlier in another question, they said who are your most important stakeholders? And they started with customers and then shareholders and employees. It was much more balanced. But when push came to shove and they were given this specific question around what are you going to do with the bucks from this, they were very clear. And so, I think my experience with the surveys is often that there's tremendous insight in what the community tells you. When we did the community poll survey last year, what we found there around the community's attitudes to technology. talk about economic reforms, if we just talk about growth, we need to understand how that's being heard in the community. And the community is not hearing growth as a positive. They are not hearing technology and investment as a positive in the context of businesses. They love their technology. Australians are just huge adopters of new technology. We have, you know, very high rates of mobile phone ownership and use and all the rest. They always have. But they're not bridging that gap. They're not seeing business investing in those things as being an opportunity for them. They're not seeing the benefits of growth as necessarily flowing to them, particularly at the moment. And so, to go back to the broader question about how much growth and shareholder benefits, I think one of the challenges we face in this whole conversation is the way it gets, everything becomes sort of binary in the media. And the language around shareholder maximisation, which is a way of businesses trying to own that and understand that they do need to make a decent return, which is completely fair. But it just becomes so binary in how it's presented, and that's what the community feels. My response when we put the survey out and people were asking us about should business speak up and all the rest of it, is that this, why is this an either or? I think the message for me is that the community understands that business has a very important role to play, and therefore has very high expectations, but at the moment their expectations aren't being met. And I think that involves a more nuanced conversation, which is a more challenging one. It maybe doesn't pander to the Twitter sphere of however many characters. But I think that's the conversation we should all be demanding, and I think that's the conversation that employees are having with their employees. They're getting more of that, and we need to be having a more direct conversation about everything that business contributes, all the impacts that business has, and we really need to be having a very serious conversation around investment and what that means. And I agree very much with Andrew, we need to be doing that from the perspective of being very optimistic about Australia's future. And I'll just give a little anecdote and then I'll stop talking, but I keep talking to my team at the moment and saying, I'm not going to remember names here. I used to say the board at Woodside Division. Woodside has recruited someone from NASA. Okay? So, no joke, this person's choice was to work on the next project, which is going to Mars, or come to Perth. But they came to Perth. Now, I forget astronaut Pam's last name, but working in South Australia is also another ex-NASA astronaut. So somehow, Australia has managed to attract these two amazing people to come and work on really interesting stuff that's going on that is incredible for our future, but we sort of don't talk about that, and we're not talking about that in a way that creates a sense of ambition and imagination.
Can I just add on that, because I've looked at this in real work and an executive and things, and if you look at the nature of companies' IT investments, up until about 1995-96, the only focus for your investment in IT were systems of record. So they were like general ledger and recorded what had happened. And then analytics came in and people started to look at, and also social media, if you think about the cloud and mobile and social media, people started to look and invest outside the four walls of the enterprise in mobile and in social media, and they tried to get systems of engagement. So they were trying to engage. So if you remember the earlier this century, when it was really hip and we're a really cool company, we said, like us on Facebook. We're trying to get you to engage with us as that. And so companies put a lot of investment in systems that engage employees and also customers, mostly in customers. And then the third area is you put analytics and artificial intelligence across that. And it turns engagement into insights. So record, engagement, and then insights. And those large platform businesses that are highly successful are the best at generating engagement and insight, which translates to loyalty of the customer. And so all of us that have a Spotify subscription or a Netflix subscription or whatever it is, would all be saying, what an amazing service. And I was there at the Hive. It's still there at the Hive, you know, and I remember that. I mean, I even remember the tillage machine. But look where we are now at the subscription and the loyalty of us and the service we get and the analytics that say, listen, you want songs like this using Spotify Radio, you'll get it. And you say, yeah, that's fantastic. So we're getting the benefit of that, but somehow when it comes to businesses doing it in other spheres, we don't see the same. And I think that is an enormous opportunity for us because we're good at it. The OECD says we're the second highest in terms of cloud adoption of all OECD members. So there's something going on here. There's something going on, and I think it's an enormous opportunity for us.
Thank you. Now, we are getting some questions coming through from the floor, and I will pass over to those of you who would like to put your hand up. But firstly, we've got one from Stephanie, and I'm not sure who this is addressed to, but how is the gap between community and business to be bridged, especially the importance of R&D and business model innovation, and who's accountable? Whose accountability is it to educate and communicate these nuances? Thanks, Stephanie.
Thanks, Stephanie, for that little tricky one. But we were talking about this sort of over lunch. I jumped in there. But, so the big conundrum for me in the survey is that you basically have two issues that you can think of as, you know, either side of the same coin or joined at the hip, or which is that the community desperately wants higher wages. And I've heard lots about this. But businesses are talking about that, it's not on their priority. But the thing that will ultimately drive sustainably higher wages is investment in productivity. Right? And so this is the absolute disconnect. And somehow, and who's going to bridge that? We all have to. There's no way that this is going to be a message delivered just by business, that this is a message delivered just by government or CEDA or whoever. Everyone has got to start having some more serious nuanced conversations about this. And to my mind, when we're thinking about the work that we will do in the future at CEDA, both of these issues have got to be front and centre. The community has got to have more confidence that when business succeeds, that they will benefit from that. And it's absolutely fundamental because business is going to be the driver of our future prosperity. I mean, that's just the simple truth of the matter. And of course, government has an important role to play in enabling that and enabling other aspects of the sort of distribution and everything else. But it is business that is the one that is going to drive the innovation, that is through competition that's going to be looking for the new ways to do things. It's why we do the work that we do with this survey work and at CEDA, because we actually think business must be part of the reform agenda. We must get the insights of business into the reform agenda to drive a conversation around quality, growth and opportunity in this country. How we do more of what we have, how we create more opportunity, how we enhance well-being across the community. Business must be part of that conversation. But what we've heard with this survey, what we've heard with last year's survey, is that the community is not feeling connected to that. And business has got to start talking about how this translates to jobs, how this translates to income, how this translates to better products and services, and why what the community thinks of them matters to them. But to expect that from this level of trust that their voice alone is going to deliver that, I think is naive. And to be honest, I also think then that these conversations that try to put, you know, business in one silo, able to be speaking about one thing and not on others, is actually not in our long-term interests.
Can I agree? Absolutely. It's companies and competition drives, and in the war for talent, if you start offering the environment that is right and the wages and salaries are right for employees, you
Could I just ask you to state your name, where you're from, and then direct your question to whichever member of the panel you'd like?
Certainly. My question is actually for both. My name is Yasmin Graham. I'm the Executive Director of Red Havas, which is a public relations and communications agency. And one of the things that's come across very strongly to everything you've said is that it's the lack of communication to the public with regards to what it is that the companies are trying to do that is getting across. It's that messaging that is just not getting through to the right people in the right way. You've been talking about R&D and so on and so on, but I haven't heard anyone really talk about investing in communications. And now obviously that's the industry I come from, but I see it time and time again where there's a lot of investment in a whole range of areas for businesses, but what they don't do is actually invest in the communications out through to their publics. What sort of research have you done in that area? What is your thoughts on that? What do you think needs to be changed in that regard?
So we haven't done a lot of research on it. And for me, I think one of the biggest issues is transparency. So we actually have the capacity now for everyone to be a lot more transparent, to put more information out there through different channels than ever before. And I think there are lots of ways in which business can demonstrate its intent and its responsiveness to issues that matter to the community. I'm probably a little bit careful around the words communication, because what comes out for me from the survey is that just saying something and not backing it up is not resonating. And so when I was wearing a different hat and asked about the response, maybe I was wearing this hat on, but on a different stage, but the response to the same kind of issues. And for me, it's all about businesses telling the community what matters to them, and then business, and listening to the, not really hearing the community, responding to the community, and then showing the community that it is responding. And that's that transparency piece. And so it doesn't matter whether it's in response to an issue or a complaint or a concern or whatever else, or if it's dealing with the community investment or being proactive on something. Where it works and where it resonates is when someone speaks authentically about why it matters, why they're doing it, the benefits that they expect to see from it, and how they see those benefits being distributed, for want of a less nerdy word, but and then being able to prove it. And so to me, that's the issue. Where you see credibility is because of it. Now, when we put the company pulse survey out, there was a lot of talk about role of business. The most obvious example for me is the BHP and Andrew McKenzie. BHP has been an anchor member of the community in the Indigenous communities for decades and decades and decades. Of course, Andrew McKenzie is going to have a perspective on what Aboriginal people think and their aspirations. To me, that's actually a very authentic, incredible thing to be speaking to. Now, where the disconnect maybe exists is that the broader community's awareness around the Uluru Statement and where that goes and how that enhances the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people is maybe a disconnect, and we've got a way to go there. But even speaking out on that issue, for me, is completely legitimate and completely aligns with the interests of the company. And so that, to me, is a sort of example.
I read this morning Brendan Gale, who's the CEO of the Richmond Football Club, said that they were talking about how they've turned it around from 30 extra years of playing. And he said that he would be, of course, in the US, and one of the things he focused on was, and they've done this ever since, is rather than talking about what they're doing, they started explaining why they're doing it, and that's the difference. And I think that's a thread here, that why are we investing in R&D? Well, we're investing in R&D for this, not, gee, aren't we great, look how much we're investing in R&D. That's what we're doing. And how is what we're doing this, but why are we doing it is the key. And I think why is at the essence of the really good communicator and the good communication firm.
Right. Could I just ask one last question, because we are out of time. But how do you think the intergenerational and the future leaders join this conversation? I guess, if we think about CEDA, or we think about Griffith, or we think about all of these anchor institutions, we have to think about recreating the future. And so how do we get those quiet voices, as you mentioned, Andrew, to the table? How do
of the university's business school, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yes, we need to produce them. But I think, you know, we can produce them, but I think it's the environment in which they go into and the communication piece that they have. And as, you know, as we're all board directors in other organisations, I think, you know, we as a board also have an opportunity to influence. So
I think one of the joys of being involved in Innovation and Science Australia is we get to see a lot of start-up, scale-up businesses of all types, tech-related ones, manufacturing ones, all sorts. And I think there's something there about people getting beyond being a shareholder and investor in these things, they're actually doing it themselves. Because I'm a great believer in our national competence in solving problems. And we don't have to, go up the two long sides of the triangle to get to the solution. As soon as we see it, we'll cut the corner and we'll go quite right there. And I think that's at the heart of innovation, and it's at the heart of research and science in this country. And I think the ultimate thing would we have more people who are innovating and competing. And today, innovating and competing on the global stage is easier than it's ever been because technology has taken away the tyranny of distance. So I think I've mentioned tech a lot, and this non-R&D innovation thing and how important it is, but I think we've got less barriers to entry for our young people to do it. And I think there's a generation coming of this because the young people know fear, and they know they are highly connected with each other through social media, and they know what's right and what's wrong. So I think that'd be my suggestion. Obviously augmented by business schools and other acceleration programs from government.
So I was being a bit trite around, you know, just being a bit cheeky, but I would take this very seriously in the sense of what has happened at the organisation level. And for me, it's I'm sort of sound